I think it was a dream that they had. Looking back, it was really unrealistic. Just a cabbage patch out there.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. They thought about it a lot, talked about it, and got it done. And there it is. It's there. I think it's...
Doreen, what motivated you to leave Yale and come back to Indiana?
I had not planned to do that, of course. My wife and I were very happy there. And I was thinking I was probably staying on there. I really wasn't thinking of 5-year periods or 10-year plans. If I'd stayed there, Dr. Sen wanted me to develop a new ambulatory care center. At that time, it was one early in the development of such centers. And that's what I would have done. They were building a new ambulatory care center here, a very small one. The Qantas group was financing that. It was 11 rooms, the Qantas Outpatient Center. And they were interested in having somebody direct that and develop that. So I met with him once at the spring academic PIACI meetings, and he asked me to come back for a visit and consider coming on the faculty here. So that was somewhat of a surprise, exactly. I liked him very much. I admired him a great deal. I felt very warmly towards Indiana University, mm-hmm. always have, I think. I thought it was a sleeping giant, and not disparaging at all. There are many strengths. But I thought it had tremendous potential for growth. I was interested in ambulatory care because I thought that was a new exploding area in pediatrics. That's pretty much untouched at that time. I had some family here at that time. So I think it's had tremendous potential here, which I saw just okay. like that. And I thought it'd be interesting to do that. So it was a difficult decision. I still felt very warmly towards Yale. I have many friends from those days. But I don't regret the decision. I think it was a good decision.
Upon your return, what was the status of the Department of Pediatrics? How had, you touched on this, but how had the practice of pediatrics evolved since you'd been here before? And what was the status of the School of Medicine as a whole?
Well, again, I think it was fairly limited to the state orientation, particularly. Research was just beginning in a big way. Mostly through new chairman of medicine at that time. So that was beginning to come through here. The faculty at Raleigh was fairly small. I think there were a total of 10 people. As I mentioned before, there are now probably at least 140 faculty. There were very few subspecialists. There was somebody in cardiology, 2 people. Now there are a dozen. There were no neonatologists then, of course. Now there are, I don't know, maybe 20 of them, 25 of them. And there weren't many subspecialists like endocrinology or things of that nature. There's somebody there in metabolism and in nephrology, kidney diseases. Most of it was general pediatrics. There was no pediatric surgery here. Dr. Grossfeld came later. There was no pediatric orthopedics or pediatric neurology. Or pediatric radiology. There was no x-ray unit at Raleigh. It was over at the University Hospital. That was at Long Hospital then. There was no cafeteria at Raleigh at that time. Everybody had to walk over to the cafeteria across the way. There were no separate laboratories then at that point. Surgeries were pretty primitive in their physical status. So it was looking back on it, not exactly a third world country type thing, but it wasn't a cutting edge, I didn't think at that time, but I thought it could be, very definitely. There was interest in doing that, it was just a matter of time, leadership, and money. So it was a starting in many things, but it also gave pretty much potential. It was sort of open field, you pick what you want to do, and I must say I always had tremendous support for what I wanted to do. tremendous support. I got it from Dr. Meeks, and whether he agreed with everything I wanted to do or not, I don't know, but he really supported me in that a lot. The dean, the university has, the board, the Raleigh Board of Governors. So whatever I've accomplished here, I think, is largely due to them. And that's unusual to have such support. And it was the envy of many of my fellow pediatricians around the country. They couldn't believe the RMA, the Raleigh Moral Association. And a lot of them, when I became chairman later and they came to visit me here, really want to know how to operate, how to get started, how it operates. I think the contribution of Raleigh Moral Association to the Raleigh Hospital and to the university is probably understated. I'm probably the closest to that of anyone here because I worked with them for a long time. And they have a major contribution. Raleigh Hospital will be nothing like it is today. Nothing. If it weren't for them. And they're going to be the driving force for the next generation, without question. It's going to be very exciting. And 10 years from now, the University of Raleigh will be so different than what it is now. Really forward moving quickly. So I just want to acknowledge those people who give of themselves tremendously, like Perry Lesh and people like that, his successors. So that was a great help.
What were your goals when you did come in faculty and at the outpatient center?
Well, I think ambulatory centers were, in terms of academic pediatrics, were at the bottom of the list. They were not included in the annual academic pediatric meetings. A group of us started, outpatient directors started meeting at that time. At the annual spring meetings of the Academy and the various pediatric associations. We didn't have room to meet in. We met in the lobby. It didn't fit into academic world. That's so different now. Now the Amatory Pediatric Association, which I'm one of the founders and the second president of it, is the largest academic association of all those. It's almost the tail wagging the dog now. That's happened very quickly. A giant waiting to be awakened and developed. And I can see that here. I thought that would be terrific. We could really explode. I don't know how many visits we had a year then, maybe 20,000. Right now we have 130,000 visits a year. And that could be increased if we wanted to. There was no literature coming out of there, no articles. Now a lot. We wrote, Dr. Hecker and I edited the first book on ambulatory pediatrics. So it was an opportunity to really develop a new field. Almost from nothing, and that was very exciting. And I say right now, he and I are working on a history of general pediatrics. It's called general pediatrics now, amatory pediatrics in this country, and just about got it finished.
Wonderful.
So that's interesting how that happened.
Wonderful. You described the School of Medicine at that time as kind of a sleeping giant. I understand that you went to Washington, D.C. with Dr. Merritt to get funding for the School of Medicine. Can you tell me about that?
Well, we were thinking about building the new Raleigh Hospital, and that was phase two. That's the white concrete building. Because the old facilities, the original facilities, were really outdated. They had separate boys' wards and they had separate girls' wards. They were open wards, they weren't individual rooms. Isolation or infectious disease was back in the back. It was really hot in the summertime, no air conditioning. It was really not good. Infants, there's no really place to give excellent, up-to-date newborn care. Neonatology is exploding at that time. So we're working in outdated facilities without question. And urgently needed to build new facilities. That raised the question of where's the money going to come from. At that time, there was money available from the government for children with disabilities, both for construction of facilities and for a program. We were one of the first to apply for that construction grant, and then for the programmatic grant, which we now have in existence, like 35 years or so, funding for that. So we were in that was matching money. It was 3-1. And that was a very important segment. Without it, we couldn't have built that building. And there was money for general construction, which was helpful. We also got a grant from the Baxter Foundation. That's how it all started. I gave a talk once to the Raleigh Memorial Association annual meeting, and I talked for the need for a new facility for children, like a motel, called a Parent Care Pavilion. It was the first one of its kind in the country. And that was kind of a predecessor of the McDonald's houses around the country. There's a woman in the audience whom I didn't know was there. She was of the Baxter family. She was visiting. She came to the lecture. And a few weeks later, one of the people on the board, who was a good friend of theirs, asked us if we could use some money for that. And so that's how that got started. So that was eventually that money led to $1.5 million, plus the federal money and some money from the RIMA. It made that white concrete building feasible, built. And that was part of the new rally. It wasn't just a building, it was what was in the building. And it showed a lot of vitality. Just as the new building, the Phase 3 building built in 1986, that had a great impact on this campus. That made Raleigh's presence known without question. And the bridge across the street there to go to the research building, that was another very powerful statement. The ambulatory building is another very powerful statement. It's there, it's concrete. So different than back in 1957, when Raleigh was kind of a fading presence here, I think. Those were all exciting things that we worked on.
You know, the statement that Raleigh is making a commitment to be a national leader in pediatric care and a leader on this campus, correct? Or?
Yeah, I think the whole school is. I think the we can't separate Raleigh off from the rest of the school. Don't want to. I think that's one of its strengths. The founding fathers of Raleigh Hospital were very wise. They decided that a children's hospital would not be a great hospital unless they were linked to a great university. That was far-reaching. It was like the people who developed the Constitution of the United States. They were far-seeing. And I think the founding fathers at Raleigh Hospital were very far-seeing, remarkable people, as I see it. And they thought that it ought to be a part of the university, and they deeded the hospital to the university. And they have never tried to control what goes on in a hospital. They keep hands off. They're there to help support the things that the staff wants, the faculty wants, but they don't want any control over it. It's just unusual for some boards of hospitals. So that's how that came about, I think.
You talked about construction programs. What were some of your other goals when you became chairman of the Department of Pediatrics?
Number one goal is easy to say, was recruitment. That's the most important job of the chairman, without my view. You can't have a great institution or a great department without great people in it. That's the lifeblood of the place. And so we were determined to recruit, it's a hackneyed term, best and brightest that we could, in a very competitive environment. There are only so limited number of people like that around the country, never enough. But we want to go out and get the very best. So that's been my major endeavor throughout my chairmanship, is to recruit great people. And it's continuing now with Dr. Schreiner. It is really going to get the very best people, and then it will succeed. So that's my number one goal at that time.
What were some of the biggest challenges you faced?
Well, my personal feeling, I guess, was kind of the, I would call it, culture of care at Raleigh. I think now Raleigh has a unique culture, it's its trademark, and that's the spirit of caring for the children and the families there. I think it's been the most family-oriented, child-oriented hospital for children in the country, maybe in the world. No, I don't have any question about that. It wasn't originally. It was a situation where parents were permitted to visit once or twice a week for maybe an hour or two. And when they left, all the children would start crying, of course. And people were indicating, well, if you have parents there, they'll cry. They'll get in the way. So I thought that was nonsense. And the first thing I did when I became chairman is to have open visiting like that. And parents come anytime they want, they could stay. At that time, they weren't very comfortable accommodations for them, as there are somewhat now, and they'll be better in the next remodeling of the place or new building going on. So I think the culture of care, which I hope people can sense when they come there, and it that has to be, of course, combined with superb medical care. You gotta have both, I think, but they're not mutually exclusive. So I'm very pleased with that. I went well involved with nurses and child life people and many other situations. I think it was an important, exciting development.
What about the development of research at Riley?
Well, that was another goal right away. I personally thought that originally we really needed to get better physical facilities for the children. They were largely obsolete, I think. We needed to get a great number of specialists there who could take care of any problem in the children, no matter what was in the state of Indiana, such as surgery. We needed to develop surgeons here and radiologists and all those other people to give super clinical care. I think that was the main purpose of the hospital. It was dedicated by the founders. They wanted better care. At that time, there was osteomyelitis, poliomyelitis, and they could see those crippled children, and they wanted those fixed. And now we can do many more things for children. So that was my number one goal, bust the culture that came together. And once that's established and things were pretty well developed, and Raleigh had an excellent reputation in the state, working very closely with family and doctors and pediatricians, then we could turn our attention to research. And then to really do it well. And that's what's happening now in the last 5-10 years. That's why we developed the research plan, the Well Center, and so on. So that's coming now, I think. And it'll probably be very great, I think. But you can't have a great children's hospital without research. You just can't. Any hospital that calls themselves a children's hospital, and many do these days, they have 30 beds, 40 beds, they call themselves a children's hospital. They can't. They don't, unless they have research going on, that spirit, they won't be able to take care of these very difficult patients that come in now. That you have to have new treatments, new ideas, new approaches, new technology. And so you can't have a great hospital without that through the research. And the Raleigh board is committed to that. The university is committed to that. The medical school is committed to that. So that's going to be a big forward step. It's going on right now, of course.
During your tenure, what were the greatest achievements of the Department of Pediatrics and of Riley Hospital?
I think it brought to the children in Indiana superb care, medical care, second to none in this country. That was our number one objective, I think. That's what we've been very responsive to the people of Indiana. I see that as our job, not just being a chairman in a hospital, just looking within the walls. But I think, and we haven't realized this completely yet, but I think the chairman of pediatrics is in a very wonderful position to influence the care of children throughout the state, not just by himself or herself, but with others. Again, teamwork. And to meet the broad needs of children, and we maybe get back to that later here. So I've always been interested in if I were planning the future, and I have in the past, I would write down and study what I would see as the needs of children in 10 years from now in Indiana. What are the needs of children? They're changing rapidly. A lot of things are changing. The family's changing radically. We see it every day in terms of education and all these other things going on. And how can we be responsive to that changes? We have to think about that 10 years in advance, because it takes 10 years to make something come to being. So I was very interested in influencing the care. Now, if you're going to influence the care, the medical care of children, then you have to produce physicians and nurses and therapists and so on who are really the best in the country, really know what they're doing. Because they'll go out in various places around the country, around the state, as they have. The care of children in Indiana is vastly different than it was 30 years ago. There are more people out there who are extremely well trained.
Mm-hmm.
That was our job, part of the job, I thought, and I think it's been very successful. We, the number of pediatricians in this state have gone up radically, as well as nurses and OTs and PTs and nutritionists, the whole spectrum. And we're now involved in training med-peds people who are both excellent in medicine and pediatrics. And we work closely with family medicine to do well there, because they take care of a lot of the children in the state. So I think that was an important job of ours, to not to stay within the walls again. I see those walls over there, but that's not the Raleigh Hospital.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it is physically, but the Raleigh Hospital has tentacles everywhere, quietly making contributions. And I think that's one of our potential great contributions in the future. So I was very interested in that, doing that, facilitating the work of the practitioners. I worked very hard at that. They're out there, they work very hard, long hours, and when they have a problem with a child, and they do, when the children walk in or carried in, they may not always know exactly what's the best care is today, because they haven't seen a lot of them. We want them to be able to pick up the phone, call anybody at Raleigh, and say, I have this child, this is what he's got, what do you think I ought to do? And we got tremendous numbers of calls like that. We don't always have to see the child. Hopefully you don't have to, because that makes the family move, to come all the way down here and so on. But just sort of make suggestions to them and so on. If they want to see the child, we will. So I think that improving the care of children in Indiana, Raleigh's played a big role in that, without a question. I think the standard of care of children in Indiana is really much better than it was back then. Excellent. I see very few instances in which care is not really superb, or they don't send a child for something. The one that's most missing is mental health,
right,
without a question. We see so many. Just before I came over here, was a child with a mental health problem. And I won't go over the details. It was a little 3-year-old child who was really acting up. And he's in an unbelievable situation. There's no way he can get out of it. He needs really massive intervention. To have that child seen by competent mental health nurses may take 3 months.
Wow.
Or 4 months. That isn't right. Isn't right. So I've been very concerned about that. How can we, if we can't prevent it, some of these things you can't prevent. But if it's preventable, let's prevent it. It's much easier to do that than it is to treat some of these children. And I think that's, I just wrote a paper on I call it the troubled toddler, because in the last couple of years I've been seeing in our clinic here more and more angry toddlers, infants and toddlers up to age 3, who are acting up, who are biting, kicking, hitting mothers, screaming, setting fires, all sorts of things. And that's a product of this situation in which they live often, many troubled families, much family violence, much broken homes, many single mothers who have no support systems. Well, I think that's part of medical care, plus other kinds of care. And I think that if we see it here, and we do, it's like far advanced disease.
Yes.
If we see a child with a far advanced physical disease, we are shocked. That shouldn't happen today. If he has tuberculosis, not diagnosed early. We think that's not good. Or he has advanced renal disease and it's not diagnosed early. That's not good. Well, we have the same standards to mental health developmental problems as well. Because there are lots of them out there. So I'm really concerned about that.
Right. Well, but I think mental health is a problem as a whole. What role should the School of Medicine play as Indiana's only medical school in dealing with such problems? And how is the School of Medicine important to the state as the schools, as the state's only medical institution?
I think that, and this applies to pediatrics too, I think that we have to be concerned about individual care, one child, one family, that we have to be interested and involved with population health. I see at Raleigh, you see certain groups of children coming in, not all at once, but one by one, and I can see a new problem. I see like these ones I tell you about, the troubled toddler, that's a relatively new population, which we can identify, define it, we talk about it and write about it, and bring attention to it that way. It's a public health situation, population. And I was acting commissioner of public health for about 10 months a few years ago. They needed someone just quickly, so I volunteered for that. And because I was interested in what we do about that in public health. I think the public health involvement in the state here would be enriched if we're a university and if the medical school, and in terms of children, pediatrics, they're much more involved in that. You can recruit people for that jobs, maybe, tie it together, do the research, and so on. So I think that's, if I pick about one unmet need that we could really do something about, I don't mean just visionary, not really accomplishing, we could do that. But you have to identify, you have to talk about it, and you have to interest people. So I think that's unfinished business. Not just here, throughout the country, throughout the world.
Yeah.
But I think here we can do something about it.
In what other ways is the School of Medicine important to the state?
Well, I think we're lucky here in a way we have one medical school. There are not a lot of competitors as there are in Massachusetts, we'll say, or Connecticut, or many other states, California. So you have the repository of responsibility for medical health and of the state, and plus their national role. And I think they're meeting that, trying to. They're working at it very, very hard. They're much more involved with continuing medical education. They're very active in that, acting research. They're active to some extent in public health. That will come more. There's a new school of public health now. There's going to be a new informatics program here, which kind of gives track of what's going on in the state, what illnesses and things like that, and data, which we've got to have. So I think it's moving along really well. There's so many things going on, and it's these things are costly. So you have to have the money to do them, and you have to find the people that can do them. So it's a challenge. But that's what's exciting about it. If no challenge,
yeah,
it'd be kind of boring.
I think we should stop there and then ask the next question on.
That's it.
You're tapping me on the shoulder. We have 5 minutes left.